Awesome. Well, we've got another good Sunday here at Gateway. This sermon, I want to tell you this before we start, because this came about in kind of a funny way. I've known I was preaching this day for a long time. We planned out the schedule. But it was one of those times where I was struggling with what to preach on. I just wasn't quite sure. I had some ideas, but I didn't know exactly where to go with this week. I normally am prepared well ahead of time. This is one of those weeks where, you know, I was like, okay, I've got to get something done here. So I was like, Carly, you have any ideas for the sermon this week? She's like, well, I've got this graphic of a lion that I've been wanting to use for about 2 years. Nobody ever preaches on Daniel. I was like, okay, let's preach on Daniel. It was legitimately one of the things I was thinking of beforehand, but I thought, hey, let's do it. Let's talk about Daniel. I've been thinking about it. And Carly wanted to use a graphic of a lion, so here you go. You get a sermon on Daniel this morning. And I think that Daniel provides an example for us of how to live in a culture that was opposed to his practice of faith, a culture that it was not easy to practice his faith. So we're going to take a couple minutes, we're going to do a quick survey of a little bit of Daniel, and then we're going to dig into a couple of things that we can draw from this book. So when we come to the story of Daniel, historically, just to lay a bit of the background, the northern kingdom of Israel has already fallen and been defeated and exiled by Assyria at this point in history. The southern kingdom of Judah is still independent, is still ruled by the Jewish kings. But as Daniel opens, it's kind of the beginning of the end of the southern kingdom of Judah. The events of Daniel, chapters 1 to 6, take place from 605 BC to 539 BC. Now, Judah was defeated and exiled by the Babylonian Empire in 586 BC. So this is only about 19 years before the final defeat of Judah. Now, preceding the final defeat of Judah, in 605 BC, the Bible tells us there was a number of young men, young nobles from the Jewish court, were captured by the Babylonians, and they were shipped off to Babylon as captives, and they were instructed to learn the ways and the culture of the Babylonians, and at the end of a three-year educational process, they would be tested, and if they passed, they could enter the service of the king. So in Daniel 1:18, we read this. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them into his service, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. Now, what I find interesting here as we read this passage is that if you place yourself in that situation, imagine being kidnapped, essentially, taken away from your homeland, from everything you've ever known, plunged into a foreign culture, and you are not asked, but told to learn a foreign language, learn a foreign culture, and prepare to enter the service of a foreign kingdom which has defeated and enslaved your nation. Not a pleasant situation. Now, I think Daniel and his friends, they could have chosen to be angry and resentful in this situation. They could have refused to take part in the curriculum. They could have refused to do anything that they were told. They could have made it as difficult as possible, and we probably never would have heard of them in the story of the Bible. But it appears that's not the route that they chose to take. For however they decided to do this, they decided that they would engage themselves fully in the curriculum that was provided for them. They would learn what they were instructed to learn, and they did it so well that they excelled beyond any of the native-born people who were presumably being trained alongside them. They did an incredible job. And we understand, of course, this was not them alone, but God was empowering them to do this. But Daniel and his friends had to choose to be willing to participate in this process. Now, sometimes we make our own choices. We define our own life path. Sometimes circumstances are thrust upon us that we don't choose. Now, Daniel and his friends didn't get to choose to go to Babylon. This was something, a circumstance that was placed upon them. It was not their choice. But we get to choose how we react in the situations that we are placed in. And Daniel and his friends had to decide what to do with the situation and the time that was given to them. And it appears that they decided with God to make the best of the circumstances that they were placed in. And their dedication to their assignment was that over time, they became extremely influential in the foreign kingdom of Babylon. Now, jumping ahead a bit in the story, just to summarize, in chapters 2 and 3, we have the famous stories of Daniel interpreting Nebuchadnezzar's dream and the fiery furnace. If you grew up in church, you've probably heard those stories a few times in Sunday school. If not, go back to Daniel chapter 2 and 3 and read them. Jumping into chapter 5, Belshazzar has followed his father Nebuchadnezzar as king, and we have the story of the writing on the wall, another fairly well-known story that you may have heard if you grew up in Sunday school. Now, jumping into chapter 6 in Daniel, we've skipped ahead quite a bit in time. Daniel is now an old man. He would be around 80 years old or more, because we've jumped ahead about 67 years in time here. He has served faithfully under 3 different kings, Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, and now the Babylonian Empire has been defeated by the Persian Empire, and the Persians have taken over, and Daniel is now called to service in the Persian Empire. Because of his reputation of wisdom, experience, and his lack of corruption, it's noteworthy to notice that Daniel was trusted in this foreign kingdom where he was a foreigner. He was trusted extremely deeply by the rulers and leaders of the kingdom. It was known that he was not corrupt, that he was trustworthy in all of the matters that were given to him. He had integrity. He would do what was needed, and he wouldn't just do it. He would excel at the tasks that were given to him. Now, because of this, he is to be placed in one of the top 3 positions in the kingdom, overseeing 120 regional governors or administrators. He did that so well that he is now going to be promoted to oversee the overseers, and he's going to be in charge of the whole kingdom below only the king himself. He's going to be second in command of the whole empire. Now, due to this impending promotion, there's a number of jealous officials attempt to undermine Daniel. They don't like that he has excelled and has reached essentially the pinnacle of his career. They quickly realize that they're not going to be able to blackmail or derail Daniel. There's simply nothing in his background that they can accuse him of that would be believable. He didn't have any skeletons in his closet. There was nothing they could use against him except his faith. They realized that his faith would be the only way they were going to be able to bring him down. So they come up to the king, they flatter and manipulate King Darius into proclaiming a period of prayer in the kingdom to himself, the king, only for 30 days. And they believe that by doing this, that they assume that Daniel is not going to worship the king because they know the depth of his faith. It's been observed and they understand that. They believe that they can trick and manipulate the king into then having Daniel arrested. Now, this happens. They flatter and manipulate the king. He signs this proclamation, period of 30 days. Everyone is supposed to pray to the king himself only. And of course, by this point in the story, hopefully we know, Daniel is not going to do this. He is not going to change his faith in God. It seems possible that he could have decided to quietly close the door, so to speak, withdraw into his house and pray out of sight and try and keep a low profile, but he chooses not to do that. He continues praying. he continues, you know, his windows are open. It's obvious that he is able to be observed at some level. These officials are watching him and collecting evidence against him. And they're intent on entrapping him. They observe him. They collect their evidence. They believe they have enough against Daniel to accuse him. And they take their evidence to the king. And again, they flatter and manipulate him and accuse Daniel of breaking the law that the king had just written. The king, we learn at this point, does not want to execute Daniel. It appears that he is actually quite fond of him, or at least values his skills in the kingdom, and does not want to execute him. He tries to find some sort of way to release Daniel. Maybe he tried to convince him to give up his faith in God and, you know, just submit to the prayers, just like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did when they faced the fiery furnace, where they had to face the challenge of not submitting. But Daniel does not. He says, I'm going to continue praying to God. I'm going to continue in my faith as I've done my whole life here in this foreign country. The king realizes he can't change his mind at this point. He has to follow through on what he said. The punishment is that Daniel is taken and thrown into a pit of lions. Now, that does not sound particularly pleasant. Presumably, these lions were hungry. These were not friendly lions. These were not zoo lions. Lion hunting was a sport in Babylon, the Persian kingdoms. They were kept for the sport of the kings to hunt them. They were typically kept hungry so that they would be aggressive. And so this is a death sentence, in short, right? Daniel is not going to survive this, or at least that's what everyone believes. But the king talks to Daniel and says, he has faith himself that Daniel could be saved from this situation. He wants Daniel to pray. He says, Daniel, pray about this. I hope you're going to make it through the night. And Daniel believes that God could save him, and he entrusts his fate to God. Now, probably most of you have heard this story before. You probably know the ending. If you don't, Daniel doesn't die. He's saved. God shuts the mouths of the lions and protects him through the whole night. And in the morning, the king anxiously rushes up to the den of lions, opens up. Daniel, are you still there? Yes, I'm here. God protected me. I'm unharmed. He's lifted out, and he continues on in his service of the king. God protected him and saved him in this situation. Now, the king, after this, says this in Daniel chapter 5, or 6, verses 25 to 28. Then King Darius wrote to all the nations and peoples of every language in all the earth, may you prosper greatly. And the Persian kingdom at that time was huge. So this is a ton of people that this would have reached. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So the result of Daniel's faithfulness in this trial is that the king comes to know something about God. We don't know exactly what his faith looked like, but he certainly believes that God saved Daniel, and he proclaims this to all of the whole empire. And presumably, this affected a lot more people than just Daniel and those immediately around him. And at the least, glory was brought to God's name through this circumstance. So I want to draw a couple of lessons from this brief survey of Daniel's story. What does this story mean to us? What can we take away from the example of Daniel? The first is to live in the moment that God provides. We don't always get to choose our circumstances. We don't always get to choose the things that happen to us. Daniel didn't get to choose his life story. The majority of his life story was placed upon him when he was kidnapped and taken to Babylon. But we get to choose how we react to the circumstances that we face. Daniel could have sulked, rebelled, been angry, resentful, done anything he could to not fulfill what was expected of him in this foreign nation. But he chose to excel, and I'm assuming he spent a lot of time in prayer about this, and I'm assuming God had something to do with it and laying on his heart what he was to do. But he chose to work hard and to excel in the circumstances that he was placed in. And the result was that he served influentially under three different foreign kings for his whole life. And sometimes God allows us to be in, or even places us in, circumstances that we would consider less than ideal, but are in there to bring glory to God's kingdom. Joseph comes to mind here when we think about that. You know, he was sold by his brothers to a foreign kingdom, and like Daniel, he rose to second in command of a foreign nation, in that case, Egypt. Circumstances that he didn't choose, but that God used for his glory. God gives us our lives and our moments, and it's up to us to take each moment and to live for God's glory. Now, this quote, I think, sums this up well for us. And it says this: spirituality, we have all learned somehow, is something I have to leave where I am in order to find it. I get it in small doses, in special places, and under rarefied conditions. I hope I get enough at one time in life to carry me through all the other times. But if we are not spiritual where we are and as we are not spiritual at all. And I think that's one of the key lessons from Daniel. He had to live out his faith in the situation that he was placed in. He could have sat there wishing, oh man, if I was only back in Judah, if I was only back in my homeland, if I was only around people that spoke the same language that I grew up speaking, if I was only with my family, if I was only back in the position that I would have inherited, because he was a young nobleman, he would have had some sort of position in the Judean court that would have been waiting for him. But that's not what he got to do with his life. And for us, we have to choose in the circumstances that we find ourselves in to worship God, to be spiritual, because we can only worship God and be spiritual, place our faith in God where we are. If we are always looking for something else or longing for something else, or think, oh, if only I was in these circumstances, if only I was here, if only my life was like this, if only that had happened instead of this, and we wait for those ideal circumstances to happen, we don't live out our faith in the moment, because the only moment we have is right now. The only moment we have is right here. The only choices we can make are the ones that are in front of us right now. We can't change the past, and we don't know the future. We have to serve God where we are, when we're there. Secondly, is like that, to worship wherever you find yourself. Some things may be conditional in life, but worship of God is not, if we are to have faith in him. Daniel worshiped God despite his circumstances, despite the uncomfortability of being in a foreign land that didn't worship God, didn't worship in the same ways that he did, where there was no temple and religious system that would have supported his expression of faith, but Daniel still chose to worship. He could have quietly tried to put his beliefs away and continued to worship God in private and just kind of set aside. Like, Daniel's essentially in a political career. And if you look at our world today, in any career, there seems to be more pressure to kind of put aside our personal beliefs, right? You know, you can believe whatever you want as long as I don't disagree with you, as long as you don't express it publicly, as long as we don't disagree on things, right? You just don't, you kind of do your own thing, but don't do it publicly. Don't bother other people with your faith. We kind of live in a culture that's increasingly seemingly moving in that type of direction. Daniel faced a very difficult situation where his faith was totally different than the people that he was surrounded with. There probably would have been a lot of pressure. There was a lot of pressure to believe differently, to act differently, and to express his faith differently than he did. But but he continued worshiping God where he was, as he was in the moments that he found himself in. When we worship God, there is no separation between secular and sacred that makes any meaningful sense. Either everything is sacred or nothing is. We can't separate the two. Either we live for Christ in every situation we find ourselves in, or we don't live for Christ. We can't divide the two. We can't worship two different masters depending on the situation and the circumstances. And the call for us is to be wholehearted as Daniel was, to maintain the same faith no matter what situations we find ourselves in. And the third point is that we see that God is real. It might sound cliche, but this episode in the Lion's Den teaches us a few important things about God. God proves that he is real. And the evidence for all who observed this episode is compelling. The king himself is moved to write a proclamation in praise of God. And he doesn't just talk about God. He says the living God, because he believes that God is alive and is doing things, is actively involved in history, is actively involved in people's lives, is affecting and changing circumstances. And this story would have been very encouraging for the Jews, who were at this time going through an intense period of persecution, defeat, and exile. It was obviously written down, and it would have been spread around at the time or later on, and it would have been very encouraging for the people who worshiped God, who were struggling with persecution and the loss of their homeland at this time in history. We see that Daniel is saved because he was innocent, because he had placed his trust in God, and simply because God chose to save him. Now, this episode also foreshadows the coming consummation of God's kingdom. In the lion's den, these hungry, angry lions are stilled, contrary to their nature, the way that they were raised and trained. And this recalls the peace of the ancient Garden of Eden, and also looks to the future restoration of the earth, of all of creation. Hosea 2:18 says this: "On that day, I will make a covenant with all the wild animals and the birds of the sky and the animals that scurry along the ground, so they will not harm you. I will remove all weapons of war from the land, all swords and bows, so you can live unafraid in peace and safety." This episode in Daniel teaches us that the way the world is right now is not the way that it's going to be forever. We look back to the Garden of Eden, to perfection, the way God intended things to be, and we look ahead to the future, that the world will be made right again one day. Jesus will return, and he will make all things right. He will bring a full and complete restoration of the earth as it was meant to be, as we see in the Garden of Eden. And finally, we read this passage in Hebrews, in chapter 11, verse 32. "What more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah, about David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies." Now, he's not mentioned by name, but shut the mouths of the lions. I'm only aware of one time in the Bible where that happened, so it's almost certainly Daniel that is referenced in that chapter in Hebrews 11, where he recalls the faith of the prophets who had come before, the leaders who had come before. So I think Daniel is an example of faith for all of us. He's an example of how to live out our faith in a culture that is not necessarily comfortable with our expression of faith, how to live out our faith in circumstances that are less than ideal, how to live out our faith in every moment that we find ourselves in. And as we close this morning, let me leave you with a couple of questions. I'll just ask you this and put this to you. You can think about it. What does your faith look like when you're placed in challenging situations? How do you react? What do you typically do? What does your faith look like when you're placed in challenging situations? And then for you, what does it mean to find your faith, your spirituality in the daily grind of life? Just in the regular moments that we find ourselves in, the circumstances that maybe you didn't choose, the circumstances that you did choose, just the unspectacular, regular, get up in the morning and make coffee and go to work day, where do you find your expression of faith? How do you find God in just the average, routine, everyday moments that we're all faced with when things don't seem to be spectacular and we're just kind of going along life? How do we find God in the present moment that we're given? And I think Daniel helps us with this and gives us some examples of how we can find our expression of faith in the various circumstances that we find ourselves in. I'm going to close this morning with prayer, and then we'll be able to get ready for our baptisms. Lord, we thank you for this time. We thank you that you are with us, that you never leave us, you never forsake us, and you never change. In every moment, in every circumstance that we find ourselves in, you are there. And as Daniel lived his faith and set an example for us so many years ago, Lord, may we continue to be encouraged by those who have gone before, who have led the way, shown us how to live for you, and that we would be able to follow in their footsteps in living for you, seeing you in every moment, and may our faith be strengthened and encouraged. We pray this in your name. Amen.